Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
We have Sue's News coming up here on this Wednesday afternoon. Also, Jeff Rainford, who was Mayor Slay's chief of staff and was heavily involved when there was this stadium effort several years ago. We had the Rams settlement today. Jeff's got a lot to say on that. He would have been a witness in that trial, so he'll have some details and some thoughts on that coming up after Sue's News this afternoon. Also, we're going to be talking about the great project that they have at Cardinal Glennon's Children's Hospital. I'm going to be raising some money here, hopefully tapping into many of you the next few weeks. And they do this music program, music therapy program, which, and I'm a big music guy, and Kelly McKee's in charge of that at Cardinal Glennon Children's Hospital, so we'll talk with her this afternoon as well. Kevin Wheeler coming up a little later. You know, the Cardinals signed a, Fred, you see that about the pitcher from Toronto. Lefty,
yeah,
right?
Matz.
Steve Matz.
Lefty.
I like that. Yeah, that seemed
and
like a pretty good.
He gets a lot of ground balls, so that's good with our defense.
Right. Like that a lot. And then there was Klein, even though he's off today, he liked a tweet by Marcus Stroman, the Mets pitcher who is on the shopping list for the Cardinals, apparently, and he said, the future is bright. That's all he said. And I don't know if that indicates anything, but, you know, I you'd have to say with the Mets deal that the Cardinals are, the hot stove is warming up, right? I think that's how I would put it. Hey, something's going on at Gravois Bluffs, which is sort of in my neck of the woods at 141 and Gravois. We're doing a Salvation Army. Well, I'm not doing anything. It's the Salvation Army and a bunch of folks from St. Louis doing the Army Angel Tree Toy Drive. I'll be there probably around 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. I'm going to the zoo with my daughter. I haven't been to the zoo in 2 years. I'm so confused. You still need...
Yeah, do you have reservations?
Yeah, we have reservations for Saturday morning.
Okay.
Why would you need reservations now at this point?
I don't know.
Fine. But I'm going to go to the zoo and then go over to Gravois Bluffs and what they're asking you to do. Look, there are kids out there that will not get presents, right? We are very spoiled. And the Salvation Army's Angel Tree program has been doing this for 4 decades now. Children 12 and under are adopted by donors. They help make their season bright. So all you have to do is drop off some toys and things like that. So if you want to donate something, an unwrapped new toy with all the donations benefiting the Salvation Army Angel Tree campaign will be there. Well, someone's going to be out there from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday. And the weather looks pretty good on Saturday as well. So swing by if you're doing some holiday shopping, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. I'll be out there for a little while, and the bell ringers will be there. If you'd like to make a cash donation, you can do that as well. And it's amazing to me. You know, we've done the Toys for Tots, the bike Toys for Tots drive.
Oh, that thing is great.
It's amazing how generous people are in these situations.
Totally
they drive up,
agree.
They write a big check, and they drop off toys. So, look, there's a Target right there in that complex at Gravois Bluffs. You can go in there, get something, and drop it off on Saturday afternoon. All right, let's I think it's time for a very special holiday edition of this.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No.
And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Hey, let me ask you, were we going to do the WKRP thing today? Do you have that?
I do. It's going to be... I can neither confirm nor deny whether that's going to be audio cut of the day. But yes, it is coming up.
Okay, just checking. A man in Alabama who happens to be an engineer has just broken the Guinness World Record for building the world's largest Nerf gun. Now, its builder, Michael Pick of Huntsville, built a 12-foot, 6-inch-long Nerf and Strike Elite long shot. If you are a Nerf gun pro, apparently you will know what that means. It is 300% larger than the original toy. It is fully functioning and double the size of the previous record holder. This thing, can shoot. It's got 12-inch darts of his creation that reach speeds of 50 miles per hour.
Wait, I'm looking this up. Is there a picture of this thing?
Yeah, go in and
look at it. I'm looking at it here. Michael Pick is his name, right?
Michael Pick of Huntsville. And, you know, apparently, you know, people try all kinds of stuff to get into the Guinness Book of World Records.
I got to say, that's impressive.
Take a look at that, Fred.
Sorry, I'm looking at the audio here, too. That is a military-style Nerf gun,
yes.
Isn't it?
50 miles an hour, yeah, these darts.
By the way, let's be careful with that thing. Somebody sees you on the street with that, and they're probably going to think it is a military-style weapon.
Exactly.
There's a video that I'm watching where he's showing all the woodworking and everything that he did here to put this thing together, too, which is pretty cool.
You know, what are you going to do if you're bored?
They're showing on the video on the YouTube, they show it exiting the chamber and just blasting like a water balloon. They set up a water balloon and it just popped the water balloon. Let's be careful out there.
That's right, kids. Don't try this at home.
My kids were big into Nerf guns for like, you know,
30 seconds
season.
Or a season.
Yeah, a season.
Fred, how is that? Do they just shoot them at? Do they drive you insane, or is it an outside thing?
Yeah, they just shoot them at their parents when they're when they're unsuspecting.
Mm, that's fabulous.
Yeah.
Now, of course, tomorrow Thanksgiving. We've heard all the turkey stuff, so. Let me give you some Black Friday information.
I have some good Black Friday stuff, too, if you want to tie it in.
Oh, I'm ready.
We have a little time, but go ahead.
Okay. Somebody went through all of the Black Friday ads they could find and compared the prices to how much they normally cost on Amazon, and here's what they found. Consumer packaged goods will have the deepest discounts. Now, this, of course, is stuff you use up all the time. You have to replace toilet paper, toothpaste, whatever. If you stock up on Black Friday, you could save about 45%.
On things like that?
Yes, which I thought was odd, so I'm going to try for that. They say
They're on, like, toothpaste is on sale?
That's just an example of packaged goods. So whatever you want that's, usable that you dispose of when you're done. Now, if you're buying clothes, chances are, on average, they'll be about 40% off if you look hard. That's a pretty good deal before Christmas. Toys average about 34% off. Okay, what did you have on Black Friday?
Well, are you a Black Friday shopper?
I don't go out anymore, but Cyber Monday. I used to.
So my colleague Carol Daniel from the KMOX website, she used to get into this. Her parents are older now, but her mom and her, it was a family tradition. A lot of people would go out. James Duker is a big Black Friday.
I am not surprised.
You know who doesn't like Black Friday, and I agree with him? Bill Burr.
I don't know. I don't like that Black Friday type of stuff. It just freaks me out. Makes me sad for Americans watching them getting trampled, you know?
Yeah. You don't like
Black
Friday?
Why would you do that? Why would you do that to yourself? Why wouldn't you just admit that you can't afford it at regular prices? Come back the next day like a gentleman. Just walk in there, pick out what you want, and if your kids get less, they get less. That gives them drive.
Yeah, I don't think he's wrong about that. Bill Burr is not wrong.
I used to, at Channel 4, we would fly the helicopter on Friday and do parking lot traffic reports. You know, Macy's is 40% full at South County, that kind of thing.
You know, I really think there's always been a bit of a missed opportunity with Black Friday from the standpoint that I would likely buy a pretty pricey ticket if I could be in the Walmart before all the idiots rush in at like 6 a.m. and see them trample over one another. That's pretty good entertainment. That's like going down back in the day to Laclede's Landing and watching all the women stumble in their high heels. That was great sport back in the day.
It's like a line pass at Disney. It's really not a bad idea.
I know. You could have done some charity, raised some money for charity. I'm a thinking person. I just want you to know that.
Well, I think you're kind of onto something there with that one. Boris Johnson, okay, I love this. Boris Johnson gave a heck of a speech at a business conference this week. At one point, he completely lost his place, and he needed several moments to recover. Now, this has happened to people. I mean, this happens to me, but I'm, you know, not ruling any countries. And then, I should say running countries. Then he went on about a Peppa Pig theme park he visited to try to stall. In fact, he marveled at the success of a pig that he said looks like, quote, Picasso-like hairdryer.
If I did not have the WKRP audio today, this is a very strong contender for audio cut of the day.
Yesterday I went, as we all must, to Peppa Pig World. I don't know if you've been to Peppa Pig World. Who's been to Peppa Pig World?
I have not.
Not enough. I was a bit hazy what I would find at Peppa Pig World, but I loved it. And Peppa Pig World is very much my kind of place.
Yeah, it's my kind of place, too. Look, I've watched, Dave, if Dave were here, we've watched every damn episode of Peppa Pig probably 30 times because we have young children. Now, thankfully, Sue, Alexa has emerged from the Peppa Pig era. It was a pretty good show.
Question, does Peppa Pig indeed look like a Picasso-like hairdryer?
Maybe.
That's what Boris Johnson said. He said he loved Peppa Pig World for its safe streets, Mark, and discipline in schools and mass transit systems.
I'm a veteran of Peppa Pig Live, Sue, over there at the Opera House. Took Alexa to Peppa Pig Live when she was probably 3 years old,
and
it was magical. It was really good.
Question, what age is the Peppa Pig?
I think after about four, certainly five. It's a 2 to 4 year old. Maybe show.
Two to
right?
four? Yeah. All right, that's fair.
And Peppa Pig lives in a town? Is that how that works?
Fred,
and
I have no idea. Just because I watched every episode 30 times, I cannot describe. All I know is there's a big pig who's Daddy Pig that does that. There's Mommy Pig. There's Peppa. Then there's Peppa's got something like that. They get stuck on their car. They drive up to the top of the hill. All these things.
I'm sorry, what does Daddy Pig say?
Thank Daddy
you.
Pig.
I'm just checking. A new skeleton has been found in Missouri. The bones of a never-before dinosaur species have been discovered in our state. Now, paleontologists found a skeleton of a young duck-billed dinosaur measuring 25 to 30 feet long. Boy, that's not too shabby.
That's bigger than the Nerf gun.
An adult skeleton was later found nearby. I almost feel like this is a April Fool's joke because here's what the creature has been named Parasaurus missouriensis.
Okay.
Right. Like, is that can't be real? Well, we'll have to double check on that. If I'm missing Dave, he would look that up for me. For now, scientists are keeping the location a secret, though, until it can be secured because, you know, people will go in there and try to get it. Typewriters are making a comeback. Now, they're apparently cool again, and it happened over the pandemic. One business owner in Massachusetts said so. Tom Furrier has owned a typewriter store since the beginning of the 80s. Of course, business went downhill as computers got popular, but he kept going. And once the pandemic hit, he said people were begging him for typewriters because they liked it and it was simple. Now he says business is the best it's ever been.
We are the busiest we've ever been in 41 years. I'm sick of my laptop. I'm throwing it away. Quick, sell me a typewriter. For real.
Can you imagine that?
I can't imagine.
I mean, electric or not.
That was the thing in college, though. You brought your typewriter with you.
You did, but I'm not sure I want to relive the days.
When you say you brought your typewriter with you, what do you mean by that?
Well, I brought one from home.
I did,
right,
too.
But, I mean, you didn't bring it to class or anything.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Little Fred in the back typing up his notes.
Well, because I thought maybe that before. You're just slightly older than me, Fred. But, yeah, then you had the whiteout and all that stuff that was very.
Oh, yeah.
I was a pretty good typer, which is why I'm good on the computer because you can't. You've seen my handwriting.
Oh, yeah, it's a good point.
You can't read it, so I type everything.
Well, that makes sense. Apparently, Tom Hanks is a big collector of typewriters. Side note, they did a piece on it one time on CBS Sunday Morning. He has an incredible collection. I just,
Who would have thought, right?
Right? I mean, I...
Well, but, you know, old, really old, cool typewriters are...
Valuable?
Yeah, well, they're also kind of cool.
I think they're really cool looking. And, I hate to do this without Dave. I might save it. We do have the annual list of the worst passwords. He loves password stories. And they've come out for the end of 2021. Apparently, we're not going to reveal any more before the end of the year. But they do
include... You want to save that or do you want to... I mean, it's up to you, Sue.
I'm going to go ahead and do it.
Let's do it.
Once again, the two most common ones are, Fred, what's your guess?
Password?
That is correct. Mark, can you guess the second one?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
That is correct.
Yeah. Right, right.
Now, apparently this year we also added the following winners: sunshine, football, monkey, and unknown.
Unknown?
I don't know my password. I'm just going to make it unknown. Or the classic 111111, which people were doing for a while and then were convinced it was bad, but they've brought it back.
You know, the problem is that even here, they keep changing the guidelines for passwords. So I have my standard where I have the name, and then I got the character, and I got the number, right? Because you have to have one. Well, now you got to add something else. It seems like everybody is asking, and I get it. We had George on from ThrottleNet yesterday. You got to protect these things.
But yes, you do.
It gets to be a bit of a headache, of course. You know, he always recommends that there's an app for some of the passwords, and I've never used that. Perhaps
I
should.
Haven't either. I think that, too. What were you going to say, Fred?
I think our company suggests a little friendly hint is come up with like a short sentence.
Oh,
for
that's
your
not
password.
A bad
that's
idea.
Easier to remember than just a password.
Really?
That, and then you throw like a number on it at the end.
You're right.
And an exclamation point. Yeah. The others in the top 200, here, my favorites were whatever, somebody's password, let me in, and boo-boo. Okay. Just a little something for you. And finally in Sue's News, today's random fact. The original TV dinner was the result of a Thanksgiving miscalculation by Swanson in 1953. The company was left with 260 tons of frozen turkey following the holiday, and a salesman suggested just package the excess product, put it in trays with some traditional sides, and sell them as TV dinners, and it was a huge success.
Were there that many TVs in the early 50s?
In the early 50s.
Probably not.
Go figure. Yeah.
But it was a good concept.
It certainly
took off. There's no doubt about that. There you go. I like that. No, my password is Fred Bottenheimer.
How about old Fred Bottenheimer over there, ladies and gentlemen?
One exclamation point.
I love Peppa
at
Pig.
Sign. Yes, exactly. Thank you very much. Jeff Rainford, who was very involved in that stadium effort when the Rams were potentially going to leave, would have been a witness in this trial, big settlement with the NFL, and he's going to react next on 97.1 FM Talk.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Dan Dierdorf has always been one of my favorite people. He's like one of the nicest guys on the planet. Obviously, he had to give up his NFL broadcasting career because of his knees, but he weighed in on this settlement today on our sister station, KMOX.
If that's the number, it's about the least surprising thing I've heard in a long time. There was never going to be a trial. Everybody, I think, was well aware of the fact that this was going to settle. The only thing that was in debate was what the terms were going to be. It's the money, and to me, this is of how much, and people talking about expansion franchises and things like that. But I don't think St. Louis wanted an expansion franchise. There are too many problems there. So it's the money, and to me, this is that's a lot of money. What happens to it? Now the real show begins.
Yeah, well, he's not wrong about that. Jeff Rainford with us, fresh off his roundtable appearance last Friday, the former chief of staff for Mayor Slay, very involved in all of this. Some people are disappointed by this, Rainford. They don't think it's enough that the hurt wasn't put on the NFL and Kroenke enough. What do you think?
Yeah, I was involved with it from the beginning, first in the mayor's office and then on the task force. And there were only like five or six of us on the task force who put together the stadium deal that led us to where we are today. And I'm satisfied with the result. I think it was almost 100% that we would have won at trial. But what are the damages? And, you know, we could have won at trial and had the damages be $100,000. We could have won at trial and been a lot less. Maybe we could have won at trial and been more. You know, I don't know what the basis is for anybody to say they know we could have gotten more. I don't know how anybody who isn't a lawyer in this case would know that. But as somebody who, as you know, has been very, very angry about this almost from the beginning and saw this all the way through, I think this is a good result for St. Louis. The only thing that would have been better for me personally is if we had gone to trial and all of the lies were exposed and all of the baloney that this league, the league ownership stands for, would have been brought to light and everybody could have seen it and we would have gotten the money. But this is an admission by the NFL that they screwed over St. Louis.
Yeah.
So
well,
I'm satisfied
and that's
it.
Exactly why what Dan said was right. It was never going to go to trial because there was way too much risk there on that exposure, I think, for the NFL. Because that's my concern right now. The only bad part, and I was asking Cusumano this, because people will see these stories and ESPN will run it in the LA Times. It'll be a big story. But then they'll say, oh, okay, St. Louis, and they'll just kind of move on. And I think if we would have gotten particular into the trial with all the specifics of what they did and how they treated the city, maybe more people would have paid attention.
Yeah, I was in every interview I've done over the last 5 years, people would ask me, how much money do you think we ought to get? And I was, my first answer was, well, we at least ought to get our $17 million back, the amount of money we spent. But I said all along, for me, this was proving, you know, what these men who own these football teams are really about. And that is, they treat their fans, and I believe they treat their players like commodities, like money-making commodities, and they could not have cared less about St. Louis. We were insignificant to them. I don't think they think we're insignificant today. $790 million is not insignificant. So I think it's a good settlement. The perfect storm would have been if we had gone to trial, exposed them, and got the money. But to me, the fact that they had to do this, this is the first time that I can ever remember that a city had a team pick up and move ever successfully sued.
Yes, it's historic.
So I think this is historic, and so I think it's a very good settlement. Perfect, no. Very good, yes.
Okay, so now we move to everything that happens now that the settlement is final, and Mr. Dierdorf alluded to this. Where does the money go? How is the money best spent? Is there going to be a fight over how the money is spent? Who decides all this?
Right, so the plaintiffs in this case were the regional sports and convention commission, the owner of the dome, which, as I recall, there are five members appointed by the governor, three by the county executive, and three by the mayor. They're a plaintiff, so is the city, and so is the county. Those three will have to come together and figure out who gets how much and then how they use it. To me, this is not very difficult. If we had built a Riverfront Stadium, which I was on the task force led by Dave Peacock, and Dave Peacock, by the way, deserves, you know, he should go down in history for working for no financial interest at all, delivering the stadium that forced the NFL to lie, cheat, and steal. So he deserves a lot of credit. But that stadium would have had a benefit to St. Louis for 30 to 40 years. This money is one-time money. It doesn't keep going, so you shouldn't use it for balancing budgets or giving it away or whatever to charity or whatever. You ought to use it for, you know, a capital expense, like fixing up the convention center, like doing something with the dome, either tearing it down and replacing it and creating a convention district, or fixing up the dome for events and that sort of thing. But you need to invest it in some kind of infrastructure that is going to be around and is going to create jobs and opportunities for St. Louisans for the next 30 or 40 years. And it will be a joke if it is spent on anything that 5 years from now, the money's all gone and we have nothing to show for it. It needs to be some kind of lasting economic improvement to St. Louis, or this all, then I would say we should have just gone to trial if we're going to fritter it away on something that's going to be gone in 5 years.
Okay, but can anyone coming away from this, just given the state of where we are, not only in the world, in the country, in this city with politics and everything, can you come away confident that that's going to happen, that we're not just going to piss it away?
Well, I can tell you there are going to be a lot of people, you know, in St. Louis, including a lot of people who worked on this and a lot of people who brought this result, you know, to bear. People like me, people like hopefully Dave, people like Bob Clark and others who are going to be very loud, very forceful about, you know, maybe not their own pet projects. But we have got to make sure that we use this money for some kind of long-term thing like a better convention center, like doing something with the dome, something with the National Geospatial. It's got to be something that produces long-term benefit, jobs, economic opportunities, fixing up our downtown, which would happen if we invested it in the convention center and the dome. You know, can I tell you today, given our politics, that this is going to end? Well, I can't promise it, But I can tell you there's going to be some very loud, forceful voices saying that's what we got to do.
I can see a lot of support being focused on, you know, because I think the convention center needs to be upgraded.
Oh, that would be great.
Sort of a no-brainer. But then the question about what happens to the dome, I think, is curious, because you probably could make a strong case for tearing it down and doing something else. You could probably make a case for fixing it up, but is it going to be justified? Will the ROI be there on events that would have to come into the dome? Maybe they would. I don't know. I mean, there's only so many rodeos, though.
Yeah, no, that's a decision that, you know, the people who are in the convention business and are going to have to, you know, advise us on. I know people who think that it should be torn down and the convention center reconfigured and build a convention district with more to do. I mean, you know downtown now, Mark. You work downtown. I don't have to get you wound up about the state of downtown. You know, if we had a real convention center district, not just the convention center, but there were things to do other than a few restaurants around it, you know, that could be a catalyst for downtown. If you link that to the new soccer stadium and the Ballpark Village and Union Station, you got something to build on. That's the kind, maybe it won't be that thing, but that's the kind of thing we need to do. Something that on a relatively large scale would be some kind of a game changer for downtown or the city or something.
So Jeff,
that's how I would do
just
it.
Just clarify the process here on that. So because I'm a little confused. Well, I'm always confused. But is that just something that the Board of Aldermen, the mayor, focuses on? Does the county have a say in that because it's regional? How does that all work?
Yeah, all three of them are all three, the city, the county, and the owner of the dome, known colloquially as the RSA.
Okay.
They were the plaintiffs. They now, as I understand it, have to sit down together and either negotiate or discuss how this is going to be divvied up. They could also discuss how to use it. The city of St. Louis, the mayor usually in the city proposes how to spend money, but then the Board of Aldermen has to approve it. In St. Louis County, the county executive proposes how to spend it, but the county council has to approve it. On the RSA, again, five of their members are appointed by the governor, three by the county executive, and three by the mayor. They also would have to approve any money that goes through their fingers. What I would hope would happen is the governor, the county executive, the mayor, and, you know, some business people and maybe organized labor and some other folks could come together and say, okay, like we kind of did in the old days, what is something long term that we can do with this money that would be a one-time expense, like building something that's really going to change things around? Now, you've pointed out the leadership in St. Louis isn't what it used to be. It's not what it was when we built the dome. And to be honest with you, it's not what it was when we came together a few years ago and got the plan for the Riverfront Stadium. But this is an opportunity, and it will be a joke, and it will all have been for naught. And the nation will be laughing at us if we win this big victory today and fritter it all away by spending the money on something that 5 or 6 or 10 years from now, nobody even remembers we did.
I agree.
So we still wouldn't one of the first things you'd want to do, though, don't we still owe on the current dome? Are we paying on that?
No, the dome is paid off.
Okay.
Good for us.
The dome is paid off. Now, I will say this, though, and this may be creating the confusion. So the dome is paid off. That's the money that the CVC is now saying, now that the dome's paid off, should go to fix up the convention center. It could generate about $200 million. What is happening is in about 5 years, the RSA, again, that's the group that owns the dome, it'll have no more money to take care of the dome.
I got you.
Starting in 4 or 5 years from now, there's no money to tear it down and there's no money to keep it up. And something's going to have to be done one way or the other, or we're going to have this giant hulk of steel right in the middle of our downtown and our convention district.
It's kind of what we have right now. Jeff Frankfurt, I appreciate the insight. This is a big win today, a big, big win. Appreciate your insight and all your work on this. Thank you, and have a great Thanksgiving. Best to your wife as well.
Appreciate that, Mark. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
Take care. 4:40 at 90. Actually, I lied. It's 4:39. I was rounding up like more than a minute. That shouldn't happen ever, but it's a holiday. Maybe that's my excuse. At 97.1 FM Talk. Oh, I do love that Hillary Clinton soundbite. Used to use that. Now, Cox was talking about the vaccine, putting something in his butt. I mean, I can never really be sure. with him. You have to wonder.
Yes, that was it.
445, 97.1 FM Talk. We have the governor of Missouri, Mike Parson, coming up after the top of the hour. I have not spoken with Governor Parson in just a little bit here. It's been a while, so I look forward to that. Kevin Wheeler at 525. I wanted to talk a little sports with Kevin just as we head into this weekend. Mizzou's got a big game with Arkansas, but we set him up even before the Rams settlement came in, so we're going to cover that with him as well. And the Cardinals signed a left-handed pitcher, Steve Matz, who won 14 games last year, SLU basketball. We'll skip Mizzou basketball. I think we'll talk Mizzou football, SLU basketball, maybe Illinois basketball, not Mizzou basketball. I will protect you. I'm so glad that I didn't dabble back in. Remember, they won on Sunday night in overtime, and then they were playing, Cusimano told us this on Monday, Florida State, right?
Yes.
So I walked in that night when I got home. I'm like, oh, at one point I said, I'm walking through the living room, and I reached for the remote. Oh, Mizzou's playing basketball. And then I literally stopped myself. Becky can confirm this. I'm like, nope. Nope, I'm out. I said I'm going to be out for a while. I'm not going to even risk it, and I didn't, and they got beat, of course, so I'm glad that I didn't watch. It's just abysmal is what it is. I'm not trying to be fair weather. I'm just trying to say you suck, and until you can show a little sign of improvement, then I'll be back on board.
That's fair weather.
Okay, fine. Fine, Sue. Call it like you see it, but I'll accept that. The Tree of Hope campaign for Cardinal Glennon is coming up, and we're going to raise a bunch of money. Some of the things they do at Cardinal Glennon really are amazing. We're going to highlight something right now. I love music. Kelly McKee is a licensed music therapist. What even is that? We're going to find out here at SSM Health, Cardinal Glennon Children's Hospital, with the Tree of Hope campaign. How are you, Kelly?
I'm fantastic. How are you, Mark?
I'm really good, and I'm excited about this. And I'll tell you one quick story, and I don't even know if this is just coincidental or not, but I don't think it is. So when I have a 6.5-year-old right now, and her mom had worked out of town. You know, we were commuting when she was very young, going to daycare. I'm talking like from the 7-month on period to whenever, 2 years old. And I would play KMOX. I used to work over there on that side before I moved to the FM side. And if I was listening to the news in the morning, boy, that kid was crying. I would cry. But if I put some music on, and there were a couple of songs that really worked, magically, that disappeared. So I think that was a little bit form of music therapy even back then, wasn't it?
I think so.
I thought it was pretty cool, and I definitely know she was responding to the music, and she's a big music fan today, which is good. But let's talk about Cardinal Glennon and the kids there and how music therapy works and all the particulars. First and foremost, how did you get into this particular field?
My career has taken me in a lot of different places before this field. I actually have a business degree for my undergrad degree. I worked in Hollywood and public relations for crazy celebrities for a few years. And then I think what was the catalyst was I was working in Dallas as an HR manager and recruiter for a nonprofit that helped make sure that kids with minimal resources had exposure to music and art, dance and theater and whatnot. And I was thinking, like, why am I sitting here like making offer letters and interviewing people to do these programs when I'd like to be doing something like this myself? I should be doing something with music. I've been a musician all my life. And I auditioned for the program at NYU and moved to New York, and everybody thought I was crazy. And that was 10 or 11 years ago, and it was the best thing I ever did. So I came back to the Midwest and worked in hospice for a few years, started a program for SSM Hospice, and then 5 years ago, moved over to our children's hospital, Cardinal Glennon, and started this program here. And since then, we've had so much support that we've grown from just me to 3 music therapists, an art therapist, and a dance movement therapist. So it's been incredible.
I love that story. I love it when I find out people that have unusual paths to their passion, you know, because sometimes that path is not clear, but it seems like it kind of came full circle and worked out for you.
It really did. And I think like having that business and PR background has really been instrumental, no pun intended, I guess, on program development, you know, creating new initiatives.
Well, how is this implemented then with some of the kids at Cardinal Glennon? How do you use this and you know, kind of paint the picture for how the SSM Health Music Therapy Program really works?
Sure. So music therapists, we're mental health professionals. And so differently from your traditional counselor or psychotherapist that you might imagine where you go talk to about what's going on with you, we do that too. But we also use music as our modality. So that's the difference between us. And we develop a therapeutic relationship with the kids that we work with. And then through that relationship, we're able to help them work on non-musical goals. What I mean by non-musical goals is instead of the goal being to learn a piece of music or to get better at guitar or piano or something like a music teacher or a band teacher would help with. We're helping with pain management or depression or anxiety or helping meet developmental milestones.
So with let me kind of hone in on something along those lines with you know, anxiety. How does that work exactly? And how do you know that there are benefits there?
Oh, it's amazing. There's one way that really stands out as a tangible thing that you can see. I think, you know, just like the story that you mentioned about your daughter and certain songs that seem to help her calm down. Like those are situations where like you see it and you feel it, you know, it's working. But a time where we can really measure that and see it is if someone is hooked to a monitor and like, let's say their heart rate is escalated and it's in a place that's maybe not the healthiest for where they need to be. There is an intervention called entrainment, which is where we would start off playing music, and this is live music too. We'd start playing music at the same intensity and tempo and maybe even volume as what's going on in the room. And then you start to lower that down to a healthier baseline, maybe slow it down a little bit, maybe have the dynamics get a little quieter. And you can a lot of times see the heart rate decrease on the monitor. And it's really powerful for parents and other staff members to see that. And then also for us, it's really satisfying.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So is it always live music? Or because I read something you have to explain here, because there was a group that came in with a bunch of ukuleles, right?
Yeah. So it is typically live music because, like I kind of just mentioned, like you're able to change the volume or the tempo or the dynamics or even the key to make it like something that a kid is more able to like sing right with you easily. So you can do that. So there's a lot of benefits to live music. Sometimes we use recorded music, particularly like, let's say I'm working with a teenager with an eating disorder or behavioral health crisis that's happening, and they're here for an extended period of time. They're away from their phone. Sometimes their phones are their lifeline, and that's where all their music is. And if that's their coping outlet, then maybe more powerful in that case to listen to a particular piece of music with them and then talk about, you know, like, how does this help you? When do you use this? What is it about it? Is it the music? Is it the lyrics? Whatever. And we go from there. The Ukulele Kids Club is the program that you were referring to. We have an awesome partnership with that organization. They give music therapists like myself ukuleles that when we identify a patient who we think would like particularly gravitates to music or it's especially helpful for their coping, and especially when someone is going to be here for an extended period of time, we're able to actually give them a ukulele, which we can teach them to play. And the strings are color-coded to correspond with the chord chart. So we made it really like foolproof and like so they can get quick ones and keep wanting to learn. And it's amazing because they get to keep the ukulele, take them home. And we have so many kids. Like I primarily work with kids with cancer and blood disorders. That's the unit that I mostly serve. And we have kids that are, you know, chronically here in and out for a few years at a time. And a lot of them will bring these ukuleles back every single week for their clinic visit or every time they're admitted. And it's pretty amazing to see that they stick with it. And it really does like impact their life outside of the hospital.
So Kelly McKee is with me, board certified music therapist at SSM Cardinal Glenn and Children's Hospital. We're talking about the Tree of Hope campaign. Is this something that is recommended for families, or do families have to kind of request through the program, or is it both ways?
It is actually both ways. Our consults can come in from anywhere. Like we definitely have families who know about music therapy sometimes, or have heard, you know, a family member or friend has experienced it, and they specifically request us. We also get a lot of our consults from our child life specialists, from our psychologists, from nursing, from physicians, palliative care, you name it, like anybody can put in a consult and we'll go assess and see what the needs are and then start working on meeting those goals.
Well, Kelly, the reason this is important with the Tree of Hope campaign is because the donations help fund, you know, the purchases of instruments and equipment, right?
Right. They also help with our program costs and salaries and staffing as well. So music therapy, art therapy, dance therapy, child life, our facility dog, our respite program for parents, our school, all of these services, I mean, we're essential in making Glennon such a special, amazing place and making it kid-friendly and really helping with that experience that patients have while they're here. But unfortunately, we don't bring in revenue and we're not billable, so we definitely rely on our donors and community support to be able to do what we do for the kids. So we're really appreciative that the community has embraced that and made all these programs possible.
Well, that's awesome. And you make a great representative. And I think you've made the case quite passionately here for how this affects and really helps kids out and why it's so important. So thank you, Kelly, for coming on here this afternoon. Have a great Thanksgiving. We're going to continue to spread the word about the Tree of Hope campaign.
Thank you so much. Happy Thanksgiving to you too, Mark.
I find it fascinating what they can do, because when I was thinking music therapy, I thought, oh, they're playing some recorded music. But no, this is live music that they have a lot of success with. So the Tree of Hope campaign is going to go on here for several weeks. I'm going to inspire you along the way here to hopefully donate. And you can do that right now. It's underway at glennon.org. Glennon.org. For the 2021 Tree of Hope campaign. The governor of the state of Missouri, Mike Parsons, coming up after the news.
Get more at 971talk.com. Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.